Soldado Merminio Cerqueria couldn't help but give his commanding officer a look of venom. There he was, up front, easily walking through the cleared path in the jungle whilst he was dragging a handmade sled with at least 280 pounds of dead weight on it. That made him think. It had only been a couple of days since he and Gustavo Gugafera had hacked a path through. He should be grateful he was alive, and that was down to Alves. With an inward shrug, he used his already drenched sleeve to wipe the sweat from his eyes and redoubled his efforts. It had been one hell of a couple of days. The boat slowly traveled along the river. General de Brigada Fernando Alves looked to the back of the boat, where his two men were playing cards with the professor of zoology, who was tagging along at the request of the United Nations. When the training center had been contacted by Unit HQ, he had been put in charge of leading up an expedition for the United Nations Emergency Force. But he wasn't expecting it to be such a small team on what appeared to his mind to be a wild goose chase. His skills should have been directed at routing out the growing problem of guerrilla fighters attacking the remote villages in the area. Instead, he was looking for missing animals and a couple of missing herders. This was nothing new in the jungle, and it was probably just a jaguar attack. Remains had been found and mauled, and one thing he was certain of, it was not, as the backward locals believed, a chupacabras. It wouldn't have fallen under Unit's remit had it not been for the meteor crash a couple of months ago. That, and the report of maulings, meant this investigation mission had been quietly bumped up the priority list. He looked down at his watch. If the boat captain was correct, they would be arriving in 15 minutes. He just knew this was a waste of time, but still, he could use it as a training exercise for the newly promoted Capitão Goulart and see if he could do anything with Soldados Vera and Cerqueira. As to the scientist fellow, he was just like an excited puppy let outside for the first time.
Professor Ramos,
Alves beckoned.
Over here, if you please.
Ramos took a glum look up from his cards and pushed his chair from under the table and made his way over.
I had a straight flush. First game I'd won for weeks.
Ignoring this, after a shout of,
"You too, Capitão Goulart,"
he asked,
"What do you think we'll find? Is this just a rogue jaguar hunt? You can be honest. You're here now, and you're not going to miss out on your trip."
Ramos considered before replying.
"Honestly, General de Brigada, from the admittedly poor photographs I've seen, and from the medical reports, these attacks are definitely not the work of a jaguar."
"So what is it then?"
he snorted.
"And don't tell me it's the chupacabras."
He laughed at the absurdity of the thought.
"My brief from unit says we should be on the lookout for anything out of the normal. That meteor appeared too slow on its descent, but they can't be certain as their equipment was too far away to be accurate. I don't have the security's clearances to see the information you are privy to, but scientists do talk, and from the murmurings I hear, there have been some very strange things happening across the world in recent years. So who knows?"
Goularte won a quizzical expression and a raised eyebrow, Alves noted. His captain was as cynical as himself, it seemed. The boat captain shouted and pointed into the distance. Down the muddy river was just visible a crude wooden pier. That was their destination.
"Right, men, get ready!"
shouted Capitão Galate and Deva, and Cerqueira jumped up instantly and made themselves busy. It was a half an hour later, and after coming to shore, Capitão Galate had made sure the soldiers had gotten everything off the boat and loaded into the rucksacks. They had their semi-automatics slung over their shoulders and machetes in their hand. It was going to be a day's journey to the first village, and the path wasn't that well used, so the jungle would be trying to reclaim it. Away from the river, it was a bit warmer, too warm. So the General de Brigida allowed himself the luxury of removing his necktie and opening the top button of his shirt. The ridiculous unit uniform they had been provided with was totally unsuited to the jungle. It was obviously designed by some fool in an office job. He indicated that they should move out. Capitán Gularte first, then Soldado Fera, himself and Professor Ramos, and Soldado Sequeira bringing up the rear. He allowed Gularte to take charge and left the hard work to his men. He wasn't going to needlessly tire himself out, especially in the humid heat. It had been quite a trudge through the jungle, and they were soaked to the skin. The two soldiers had been hacking away in rotation for 5 hours and were absolutely worn out. Alves had noted that Gularte had lasted about an hour before he'd stopped using his machete and had instead become a guide, using the compass and map to find the village. Rank had its privilege, after all. Ramos had started off full of enthusiasm, pointing out different kinds of plants, but the relentless heat and walking had finally gotten to him, and he lapsed into silence. It suddenly struck Alves that it was indeed silent. This was very unusual in the jungle. He mentioned it to Ramos, who just nodded and used his hat to wipe the sweat from his face. He looked like he was about to pass out.
Capitán Gularte, I think we could all do with a rest.
The words were barely from his lips when everyone collapsed to the ground or the nearest suitable branch and sat there, sweating and gasping in the heat. The professor asked what all the men were thinking.
How long do we reach the village, Capitán Gularte?
The captain looked down at his map.
It should be less than an hour at the rate we've been going, maybe 45 minutes.
This cheered the professor up somewhat, and he said,
when we get there, I'm going to drink them dry.
As he wiped his face again with a sodden hat.
Sir!
They all whipped round to face Fera. He was up on his feet, pointing into the jungle. Alves and Gularte jumped to their feet, peering in the direction he was pointing. He could see nothing. Sequeira was looking with his machete brandished.
What was it, Guga? What did you see? I don't know. It was a black shape moving through the trees over there. It was fast. Very fast,
replied Guga. General de Brigada Alves turned to the professor.
It could be a jaguar, and that will be why it's so quiet. It has scared all the other animals away.
The professor was looking around furtively, fear writ large on his face. He was wringing his hat in his hands.
Can we leave now, please? I shall feel safer once we reach the village.
Capitán Gularte didn't turn his head from scouring the dense jungle.
Let's go, men. Sequeira in front, Fera take up the rear. Keep sharp, lads.
Fera passed his machete to Ramos, who took it gingerly and unshouldered his gun. They set off toward the village, senses keenly alert, straining at their limits. They were just 5 minutes into their journey when there was a rat-a-tat-tat of Soldado Gustavo Pérez's gun, accompanied by a cry of,
Look out, Chupacabras!
The party wheeled round to see Fera being hoisted vertically into the canopy, his boots the only thing visible now, his gun firing all the while. Sequeira had dropped his machete, unshouldered his gun, and was firing into the canopy, shouting,
Guga! Guga, where are you?
The only reply was a strangled scream, which ended abruptly. Alves raised his hand, the signal for Sequeira to cease fire. Silence reigned. Then there was a series of staccato cracking sounds, and Fera's gun dropped from the canopy. It landed at their feet. Blood splashed across it. A soft
no
came from Sequeira. Ramos stood rooted to the spot, staring at the gun. The Capitão retrieved the weapon and examined the clip. He showed it to Alves. There was still ammunition in it. Ramos scanned the canopy, wiping his face with his hat to get the sweat from his bulging eyes.
I think we can be sure a jaguar didn't do this, General de Brigida.
Ularte shouted Bella's name a couple of times, but there was no response. No sound of any kind. He put his hand on Sequeira's shoulder.
Come on, let's move out.
Sequeira looked at his captain, shock etched on his face.
Come on, hermanino. We can't help him now. We need to move out.
Alves didn't approve of the way Ularte was behaving. He would have shouted Sequeira to attention to snap him out of it. But he had put the captain in charge, so he let him do it his way. It had worked anyway, and they were on their way to the village. Sequeira broke through the jungle, and they entered a clearing before the village. He could see straight away that something wasn't right. It was empty. He stood aside to let first the capitao, then the professor, and the general de Brigida, the clearing. They could sense it too. Something was wrong. They moved forward slowly. Sequeira and Ularte with semi-automatics raised. Alves now carried Ferra's weapon, but he didn't have it raised. Yet. The dwellings of the village were reed huts, arranged in a circular pattern around the center. The group headed tentatively into the center of the village, conscious of a steadily rising buzzing sound. In the center of the village, they found out what the buzzing was. Flies. Thousands of flies buzzing around the remains of the villagers who had been butchered and piled up together. Professor Ramos screamed. Alves slapped him. The professor stood there, staring at Alves.
You hit me!
He said in a small voice.
Yes, I did.
Alves confirmed.
You needed it. Now pull yourself together and have a look at those bodies. I need to know how they died. No arguments. Do it. Use your damned hat as a mask. Jump to it.
Alves stood guard over the professor while he examined the bodies, accompanied by sobbing and wrenching. Capitão Ularte and Soldado Sequeira searching the village. The two soldiers returned from their search with nothing to report. Ramos was returning too, looking very pale, the ever-present hat wiping his brow. Professor Ramos had discovered three different types of injury. A few of the victims had suffered broken bones, but that wasn't the cause of death. The other victims had slashes to the back of the legs, severing their tendons. His hypothesis was that they were the result of something being used to immobilize the victims as they fled. What each victim had in common was a set of puncture wounds. Entry points just behind the clavicles, a third of the top of the head, and this would have been the cause of death. Alves, Ularte, and Sequeira listened with distaste. Whatever it was had attacked unarmed fleeing civilians mercilessly.
Okay, I'm open to ideas.
Without saying anything, General de Brigida Fernando Alves had taken back command. Capitão Ularte was relieved. He just wanted a target to shoot at. There was a whimper from Ramos. Alves looked down at him, not even bothering to try and hide his irritation. Ramos was staring past the soldiers out of the camp, his eyes bulging in terror, his mouth hanging open. A shiver ran down Alves' spine. He turned. Standing there on the edge of the jungle was a small figure, maybe 4 feet tall, clad in black. It looked like articulated armor of some kind, short hair between the joints. The head was nothing Alves had seen before, a kind of snout with sharp fangs protruding either side. Evil red eyes seemed to be weighing them up. Ularte and Sequeira had raised their guns and trained them on the figure, Sequeira murmuring,
Chupacabras,
under his breath. Ramos had gasped and made a high-pitched squealing sound. Alves had never been in first contact situation before, and the training from UNIT had been rudimentary.
Who are you, and what do you want?
A low hissing voice came from the creature.
I am from the Reet Ark. Your planet has mineral resources we want. I am also here to evaluate your suitability for slave labor.
So what? You're a scientist? A zoologist?
Asked Alves.
I am a soldier. We are all soldiers. But my specialty is assessing planets for their resources and how best to access those resources.
I think this is your show for the moment, Professor Ramos.
Alves stood aside, giving line of sight to the nervous scientist. He shuffled forward, twisting his hat back and forth in his hands. His voice was small and high-pitched, etched with fear.
Why have you killed these villagers? They weren't a danger to you.
None of your species is a danger to us. You are weak. I needed answers to questions, and it is quicker to take those answers.
Take them? How?
I have equipment. Technology built into my suit that can access information directly from your brains. I know what these people know. Your species is pathetic. It is time for you to die.
The alien's gauntlets twitched and a set of sharp, lethal-looking claws appeared. Ramos squealed and hid behind Alves and his soldiers. They needed shelter, something they could defend, as out in the open they were sitting ducks. Alves looked to the village and wasn't impressed. The buildings were flimsy, but it was all they had. He motioned to his men, and they moved in the direction he indicated. Suddenly, there was a scream from behind him. Alves had made a grave error. Ramos had been left isolated, and he'd frozen with fear. The Reet Ark could move a lot faster than he'd thought. Without him even noticing it had moved, the creature appeared next to Ramos. Alves shouted his men, and Ramos turned to flee, but the Reet Ark flicked its arm forward, and the claws appeared, slashing through the air and slicing the back of the scientist's legs. He dropped to the ground in agony, clawing at the dirt, trying to pull himself forward, the fear overriding his pain. The creature watched him, and then from his right arm shot a steel rope, which coiled itself around Ramos's neck. It began to retreat into the armor, dragging Ramos back toward the alien. Any scream strangled in a desperate, frightened gurgle. The steel rope finished winding back into Redox's armor, and when the professor reached the alien, he was grabbed by the arms and lifted easily into a kneeling position so that he was face to face with the other scientists. Alva's men arrived to find Ramos sobbing incoherently, begging for his life. The Redox was motionless, giving nothing away. Then there was a hiss, and the fangs on the front of the helmet began to extend. The Redox raised its head back, then drove the spikes deep into Ramos behind his clavicles, pinning him immobile. He screamed in agony, but this was cut short as another implement appeared out of the front of the mask and buried itself into the top of his skull. He shuddered for a couple of seconds, then dropped to the ground, released by the alien. Capitao Velarde had run over towards them as this had played out, his gun ready. He stood now 30 feet from Redox, gun trained. He opened fire. You could hear the bullets hitting home, but they all ricocheted harmlessly from the dark figure. It stood looking at the captain, then slowly went on to all fours. It moved so fast it was just a blur, and Velarde had no real chance to react. But the Redox covered the 30 feet in 2 seconds, and before anyone could even take it in properly, it had the soldier in the same death grip he had held Alves. Velarde died quickly. The alien turned to Alves and Sequeira. Sequeira was to Alves' left, gun trained on the alien. Avis told him to hold fire. After all, it had done no good for Gularte.
You, Ritak, you have landed on this planet in a rural area. The village has no technology, and the people you have slaughtered know little of such things. Your mission so far has been a waste of time. You know nothing of our capability to defend ourselves. You are half a planet away from where you need to be.
The Ritak stood immobile, as though considering what General de Brigidad said. Then a low hissing cackle started to come from the creature, which steadily got louder. Alvis realized it was laughing at him.
We do not need technology to defeat you. Your bodies are weak, easily dispatched. Your kind cannot stand against the overwhelming superiority of the Ritak. We shall overrun you with ease. Take what we want, and there's nothing you can do to stop us. When my report arrives with High Command, a fleet of stealth soldiers will be sent, and this planet will be ours within days. Prepare to die.
There was a click as Sekiera raised his rifle, ready to fight for his life. Alvis raised his hand, a command to hold fire. Sekiera was surprised to hear Alvis start to laugh. He never heard his CO laugh, and now surely wasn't the time. Was he mad? Alvis once again addressed the alien.
You who think you are so powerful that you have to hide inside a suit of armor? You who attack defenseless women and children? You are not a warrior. You are pathetic. Face me. Face me in combat, one-on-one. No suit, just our skills as fighters. Prove to me that we should fear you. You are nothing. Coward.
Sekiera was speechless. He was looking at the alien, who stood there making an awful grinding and gasping noise, which he had to assume was anger. Certainly the red lights of his eyes seemed to glow as hot as coals. If his commander had wanted to rile the Ritak, he certainly has succeeded.
Have your men throw away his weapon and I shall face you. I shall enjoy your death even more if I can feel you die. Do it now. I am ready.
Alvis ordered Sekiera to throw his gun behind him toward the jungle. He hesitated, but the command was issued again, more forcefully. Terrified he was about to get cut down instantly by the creature, he nonetheless obeyed. The creature did not attack. It stood there, turning back to Alvis. There was a hiss of escaping gas, and the suit fell to the ground like a discarded cloak, revealing a wiry form beneath. Clad in a thin jerkin and shorts, the Ritak reached up and removed the helmet, placing it gently on the suit. A verminous face leered at them, a face that reminded Sekiera of the vermin that ran around in his hometown. The seemingly dead black eyes turned their focus on Alvis, and the mouth seemed to curl into a sneer. Razor-sharp claws popped out of the alien's thin bony fingers, and it laughed.
You thought the claws were a part of the suit. Prepare to feel them tear you apart.
There was a genuine relish in his voice, and the obscene creature was actually licking its lips. Sekiera tensed, the fight-or-flight response making his body ready for action. General de Brigida Alvis smiled. He casually removed his pistol from his holster and shot the Ritak straight through his head. Once, twice, three times. It died there, a look of confused surprise on its face. Alvis kept his gun trained on the corpse, just in case, and shouted to Sekiera to retrieve his semi-automatic. Once Sekiera had the alien body covered, Alvis visibly relaxed. He bent over, hands on his knees, and let out a huge sigh of relief that turned into laughter.
I didn't think that would work,
he said when he regained his composure. Sekira flicked a quick glance at his commander.
Yes, sir. No, sir. I mean, what would work, sir? Well,
Alvis explained.
I knew we couldn't stand a chance against that thing whilst it was in its suit. Vera and Golarte's bullets hadn't even scratched it. We had to get it out of it. I hoped I could goad it into removing it. Play on its honor as a soldier. I had to hope that, as it had only examined the villagers and seen yours and Vera's guns, it wouldn't know that I had a gun on me. I couldn't see it in the holster, and wouldn't even know where the holster was. That's one hell of a risk,
Sekiera responded.
One that paid off, though.
Alvis sounded a little smug, but Sekiera didn't blame him. He deserved to be. Then, something occurred to him.
Sir, what about the other Ritak? They'll be here soon, won't they?
Alvis cocked an eyebrow.
Will they? That thing said it hadn't sent its report yet. And I'm betting that if no report arrives, they'll think this too high risk a target and forget about us. I hope. Right, lad. Get a stretcher made up for this thing from some branches and leaves, and let's get out of here. We'll get a search party out for its ship later.
Sekiera went to retrieve a machete, relieved to be alive and full of admiration for any route that Brigida Fernando Alvis.